So at Kirk Crossroads at CXR, we have t-shirts that we've done for we do some charity events and Troy Hatch, you know, we do CXR Cares and yeah, we give a shirt. It's a branded shirt and it says CXR Cares on the back with domain for any charity work we do. And we also have jackets that we did, I guess, 2 years ago, and they have a big, you know, CXR logo on them. They're nice jackets. We like them. Yeah. But I have to tell you, Hatch, I see you in this branded branded pullover, and I miss the days of corporate when, like, every month or so somebody come rolling in with, like, here's a t-shirt, here's a hoodie, here's a OGO backpack.
Yeah, I would say that Troy and I are lucky. I think the kings of swag at CarMax are definitely our technology division. They love some branded swag. And so because we support them, we get kind of like the little brother effect. We get like kept on the list for like, you can also have, some branded swag. So we do get our fair share of that. And, you know, the occasional like vendor that will like leave a pile of, you know, hoodies or Yetis or something like that. So
I like the differentiator there, like hoodies or Yetis.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, the occasional knockoff Yeti, right? Yeah. This one is like, I actually like this one. I mean, it's a great like weight and all that, but it's I think the first thing we had where we had CarMax and Edmunds on the same. So like after we acquired Edmunds, this might have been the first thing that we did jointly together. So it's like our hackathon day. They call it Innovation Garage. Everything has to be a car.
Is your closet a lot like my? So by the time I had left PepsiCo and AT&T, like all the corporate, there were 2 years of like just wearing those brands out. And then sometimes I forgot what the acronyms meant or the team that was assigned to, or like, you know, and I love them. I wore them till they fell apart. But yeah, do you have a closet of just swag, guys?
Troy, I don't know. Do you have a buildup of swag?
Not CarMax swag, but my previous life in the Air Force, spent over a decade in Air Force recruiting. So I had, before I was an Air Force recruiter, I didn't wear anything Air Force related. Then I became a recruiter and suddenly I didn't wear anything but something branded Air Force. So when I retired from the Air Force, yes, I had an entire closet full of Air Force polos and Air Force t-shirts and Air Force hoodies. I'm slowly building my CarMax stuff up, but I'm not nearly at the level I was.
Yeah. Well, look, Hatch brought his A game, Troy, and I'm really disappointed you.
I know. The funny thing is, I had a CarMax T-shirt on earlier. I was like, "Well, T-shirt's not appropriate for this particular venue," so I switched to a polo, not knowing that Hatch was going to pull out the CarMax swag on me. So.
Yeah. I think I have to say, Troy, I think you would have been fine. I think maybe 5 of our 7 or 8 listeners are actually watching, so I think you're okay. They're sure. Concentrated on the treadmill. They're on the Stairmaster. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah. There you go. That's right. Getting some done.
That's right. Well, we do have some work to talk about today, believe it or not. You guys about ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, here we
go. Welcome to the CXR Channel, our premier podcast for talent acquisition and talent management. Listen in as the CXR community discusses a wide range of topics focused on attracting, engaging, and retaining the best talent. We're glad you're here.
Okay, welcome to the Recruiting Community Podcast. I am your host, Sherlock Holmes, ready to unravel the mysteries of talent acquisition with you. Unfortunately, it seems my trusty sidekick, Dr. Watson, is off on another adventure, so he couldn't make it today. A lot of you know him as Jerry. He won't be here. Look, this week we are joined by two CXR community members from CarMax. We've got Hatch and Troy are going to come in. They'll introduce themselves a little bit here and the roles that they play there, but we're going to be talking about the dynamics between sourcing recruiters and corporate recruiters and how to build a successful partnership. And I think a number of the listeners and certainly some of our colleagues and peers have been through these challenges, some successfully, some not. So that should be pretty helpful for most. If not, maybe a little bit of flashback, a little bit. We're going to bring back team merging trauma maybe for a few. But a few things first. We are streaming on the socials. We're on the YouTube, the Facebook, the LinkedIn. I think we are now maybe on the Instagram, the Twitch, and the TikTok. And then I keep joking, but maybe someday we'll be on the Blue Sky. I'd encourage you to check that out. If you are interested, you can see previous episodes, listen to previous episodes, and of course, see what's coming up at cxr.works/podcast. And as a reminder, the whole show is a labor of love. We've done over 400 of these episodes, and they are 100% because we just think we know a lot of cool people who have a lot of cool things to say, these two gentlemen being no exception to that. So I'm excited. If you are with us on LinkedIn, there's a live chat there. We'd encourage you to go ahead and just pop a question in there for our guest today. Or if you've got a question for myself or just want to say hello, drop that in there. We follow up with every one of those directly. And then lastly, a little bit of housekeeping. If you are a frequent viewer or a watcher, subscriber, dial-inner, whatever you are, if you notice in the bottom corner over here, you're going to see a little QR code. And we've added that to help. We've got a 501c3 we formed about 3 years ago. I've mentioned this in the last few shows. We've raised almost almost $34,000 we had raised. Now, 100% of that money, and it's the CXR Foundation, it goes into programs and scholarships. So no board members get paid. There's no compensation. There's no trade there. And we have two scholarships actually running right now, the CXR Inspire Scholarship and the Russ Mountain Scholarship. And that is for continuing education opportunities for TA professionals and their families. So check that out if you haven't, the website cxr.foundation. But if you're interested in donating, you can use that QR code, or you can just head over to www.cxr.foundation to do that. You're going to find a lot of programs over there too. History of recruiting all the way back, believe it or not, to the 1800s. We've got a diverse suppliers directory program we're working on, looking for volunteers to help a little bit with that. The CXR Cares program that gets a complete rebuild this year. We're super excited about that as we kick that off here in April. TA Talk Tank, which is a mentoring program. It goes on and on and on. So check that out if you'd like to volunteer or be part of that. And then I believe we have a board seat open. So if you're interested in that, you can let us know there. With all of that and the little QR code that's going to hang out in the corner, because all of you want to give a little, I'm going to go ahead and welcome in our guests. Here we go. There's Troy and Hatch, and I do not need to be in the spotlight. So we're going to move Troy over since he's branded better than, or we're moving Hatch over since he's branded better than Troy or I. He can have the spotlight. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Ooh, I got to take a breath. That was a lot of talking all at once.
Yeah, you got a lot in there in a short time, Chris.
Yeah, I feel good. Cranted on 7 minutes in, and I did all the things. Yeah. Well, so guys, for those who have not had the fortune of meeting either of you or working directly with you, let's do this really quickly. And Hatch, we'll start with you. Why don't you give us kind of an escalator pitch about a little bit who is Hatch, and why do we care what you have to say today?
Yeah. Well, so Hatch Ruppard, I'm the senior manager of corporate talent acquisition specifically at CarMax. And, you know, I was at an event literally yesterday where they were having everybody raise their hand and then drop it as they kind of raise the number of years you've been in a talent acquisition. And it was the first time I realized I've been in this business for 15 plus years at this point. So if that's worth anything for street cred, that would be the main thing. So I've worked in outside agencies, and now in corporate talent acquisition here at CarMax. So yeah, that's my short and sweet pitch.
I love that. 15 years. That's cute.
Yep. Yeah. it goes by quick. Yeah.
It does go. But I'm coming up on 30. It does go.
Yeah. Very well, quick. There you go. Wow. That was really fun. I got something to aspire to now.
Yeah. I don't know about that. You might get smart and get out of this space before I did. Troy, how about yourself? How about a quick pitch? Who's Troy?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Troy Schulich. I am the sourcing manager for CarMax. I lead the team that does sourcing for technology, strategy, and some military roles. I'm previous Air Force, so I don't have as much time in corporate recruiting as Hatch does, but I have about 14 years between the Air Force and here at CarMax in talent acquisition.
I love it. Well, thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you.
Well, look, okay, so guys, so we've done the quick pitch, and here's the topic. This is why it interests me. So we've seen a number of organizations over time try to incorporate like a sourcing structure or sourcing team within their organizations. Now, there are typically hurdles, by and large, sort of associated with trust or communication. I think they kind of boil down mostly to that, right? From an execution and sort of setting standards, setting expectations out front. But it's no small ask to build a sourcing structure, let alone that works in tandem and works seamlessly with a corporate recruiting structure. And I really want to hear about this. So Hatch, Troy, if you can describe the roles and responsibilities, I guess, the differences in your shop of how CarMax sees sourcing recruiters and corporate recruiters. Can you sort of lay that out for us, and then maybe how those roles sort of complement each other within the recruitment process there?
Yeah. Well, I'll start off by just saying, like, I think that it's been an evolution for us, right? So it has evolved over time. And a big part of that, just kind of the, you know, kismet of life or whatever you might want to call it, is that Troy and I both joined the company almost at the same time. And it was right post COVID. And so we had this opportunity to essentially do kind of a, you know, a reset and create some of these things in our own design and work together to make them what we wanted to, despite, or, you know, in light of what had come before us a little bit. So, yeah, so there's like a little bit of history there in terms of it, you know, it certainly hasn't always looked the way it looks right now. Troy, do you want to talk a little bit about, like, you know, kind of how we, where those lines break down and where they start and hand off and those types of things?
Absolutely. And Chris, you brought up a great point about the communication between these two teams, if you will. So for us here at CarMax, what makes the sourcing and the corporate team work so well together is that the relationship that we have and the communication that we have. I've talked with a lot of other sourcing managers out there in the industry, and a lot of them have said it's more of a, there is no relationship. They bring in, the sourcers bring in candidates and throw them over this proverbial fence. And then wherever they go, whatever happens, they never really know. I think the difference for us has been we have a direct relationship. We meet with the corporate team every week in a Monday morning meeting. We have communication throughout the week. Hatch and I work very closely together. So we always know what's going on for both sides, what's coming down the pipeline, what the recruiters are doing, what the sourcers are doing. So it's that teamwork and that communication that really brings these two teams together for us.
Yeah, I think so. I guess that would have been my next question, is like, how do you make sure that you've got a successful partnership? Because I have seen personally at an organization I was at, very talented sourcers, very talented recruiters, but just couldn't get that synergy going. Yeah. So what strategies, guys, or practices do you think you find effective in build or foster a successful partnership between sourcing recruiters and corporate recruiters?
Yeah, I think one of the things we did early on, and I give credit to one of our colleagues, Jack McCarthy, who was in the sourcing manager role previous, like really he pre-existed both Troy and I. But one of the things that he had the foresight to come up with was like a defined interaction model is what we call it, right? So essentially think of a continuum of the very first contact you'd have with a candidate all the way through somebody starting. And looking at that continuum and saying, where does the sourcing recruiter interact with the candidate? Where does the corporate recruiter interact? And where should the handoffs happen? Where should those touch points overlap for a little bit? Where should there be a clean handoff? And essentially what we realize in there is like, it's really good for everybody to understand what the, you know, the ideal scenario is, but we also needed to create like a, where's the gray space? Like, where are the places where it's okay for maybe a sourcing recruiter to, you know, stay with the candidate a little longer because of a unique situation and maybe not hand it off. And just as we worked through a lot of those situations is where we started to kind of like pressure test the trust lever, right? Like, do I trust that my colleague has had the conversations they need to have for us to get to this point, right? So if we're getting all the way to the interviews, like we've done a lot of screening and kind of initial assessment of somebody, maybe in a technology role, has the sourcing recruiter had the hard conversations about like, where do we need to be in compensation for this to make sense for you, right? Because if we get all the way to the finish line and we found out we haven't had those conversations, then the corporate recruiter who's now going to end up being involved in creating and delivering an offer feels like they're, you know, they're 10 steps behind, or the candidate might feel like it's all very abrupt. And so it was going through and finding those points where we would see the trust almost like break a little bit, or the concern creep up. And then, I mean, effectively it was just like having our recruiters lean in there, right? So initially And Troy, feel free to add in on any of this. If initially it was a lot of like, Troy and I were like mom and dad. They was like,
she said,
"Hey mom, hey dad," like they didn't do what they were supposed to do. Right. And, initially we would step in and try to solve those problems. And then what we realized was what we need is for these individuals to talk to each other. Right. And just that became the answer is like,
lock them in a virtual room and make them work it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was really,
don't come out until you get along. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
and it's worked really well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, part of that is we have great people, right. Yeah. And 90% of the time what happened is a miscommunication, but kind of where all of our heads go is we invent the why didn't they do that thing? Is it because they don't care? Is because they didn't think about it? Is because they're not as professional as me, right? Whatever that is, they insert this why. And when you put them in a room and have them have a conversation,
yeah,
they treat each other like, oh, wait a minute, you and I are the same. We have the same struggles. Like there's just a humanity to it. So we would just lean in on whenever we'd see those gaps, we kind of decided like, hey, let's lean in on having them work together to resolve those gaps.
Not a continual process. We have to revisit that every so often because those breakdowns happen in the more virtual workspace that we're in now, where you can send messages over Teams or you can send an email. All of those communications get misconstrued over time. And sometimes we have to slow the teams down and say, it's time to come together as face-to-face as we can make it in the virtual world and work through the communication so you understand where you're both at, reset, and begin the relationship again.
Well, I love the honesty and the callback there, Troy, is that sometimes we have to revisit, right, the expectations that we have set up front. We need reminders. Some of the reminders are good. Like we need reminders that this should have been done. And I want to make sure I heard you right. So it sounds to me you've kind of got it mapped out. It's not just for the sourcing team. It's not just about finding the talent and sticking them in the system, right, or emailing them to the candidate or building the slate. There are some checklist items that it sounds like the sourcing teams at CarMax have to make sure that they have covered. Salary expectations being one of those, maybe relo, maybe, you know, several different factors. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. And sharing those aspects with the corporate recruiter. And that just goes back to that communication, making sure the sourcer gets everything the corporate recruiter needs throughout the process. And then the corporate recruiter gives back where their candidates are at to the sourcer as they move after that handoff happens and they move into the deeper into the process.
So where is the, I'm going to ask you that question that a lot of people try to set these up, get a little tripped up on. What's the accountability factor for sourcing versus recruiting, or is it in some way shared? Like recruiters are being held accountable to the number of placements and time to fill and that sort of thing. Are the sourcers held accountable to slate or acceptance, or do they share that? Does it cross lines somewhere for you guys?
That's a really great question. This is something Hatch and I work through every year. We look at it, revisit it each year, because it is this. Obviously, full cycle recruiters, it's very easy. Hires is the number, right? It's right there. It's black and white. The sourcers are this gray area because they have no control over the back end, the offer process, the sale, if you will, at the end. So we look at that continuously. And what we've come up with is offers and submittals are two big metric points. So the offers, you know, whether or not the person accepts the offer or not isn't really what we're looking for. Is did we get them to that point in the process? And the submittals, the sourcers have full control over. So they have the ability to submit the right candidates in a strong candidate pool to the hiring manager, to the corporate recruiters. So those are really the two metrics that we play off of to make sure that the sourcers are meeting some type of accountability level.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't. Oh, sorry, Hatch. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, it effectively, you know, what we kind of are trying to measure there, right, for the sourcing team is like quantity and quality, right? Submittals gets our quantity metric. Are we keeping enough people into the funnel to, you know, follow through those metrics that to what we would expect to come out the other end based on historical data? But then really the hard part has always been like, you know, how do you balance those things, right? It's, I think a lot of teams that have sourcing teams or even just full cycle recruiting teams, it's really easy to get unbalanced in, hey, what all we care about is submittals. You got to get, you know, X number of submittals a day, a week, a month, whatever, right? And then what most often gets lost is quality, right? Because people are just focused on, I've got to hit the submittal number. And then, so we're trying to keep in focus, like, how do we measure that quality in a easy to capture metric? And that is like, how many people make it through the interview successfully, right? How many people basically get all the way to the other end of the interview process? And we kind of know what our baseline of success looks like in order to get, you know, a certain number of hires a year. So,
yeah. Well, and I love you don't have them competing against the same metric. And then it sounds like the line you mentioned earlier, pretty stand meeting that comes across. So I think what, you know, you've laid out communications, you've laid out expectations and follow up. You've got some metrics in place that are complementary, but are not competitive. With all of that in place, right, in this journey you've been on, can you guys share maybe some challenges that have arisen between the two groups and maybe how you've addressed? I get the lock them in a virtual room and don't come out until, you know, mom and dad are going to be pleased with the outcome. But like, how do you address those for smooth collaboration, like an efficient talent acquisition machine?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, to your question about challenges, I think that the most common one is just most often just it's communication gap, right? So I'd probably say there's kind of two that come up regularly. One would be where the sourcing recruiter is communicating. Like, one of the things we established over time was that we actually need to have the sourcing recruiter have more visibility, meaning seen more by the hiring managers, but also more visibility to the process from the very beginning to the very end. So when our corporate recruiters get a new requisition and they set up an intake, they actually, whenever, you know, logistically possible, have the sourcing recruiter that will be supporting them, they bring them to the intake, because that sourcing recruiter has just as much, if not more, value in terms of the questions about, like, what profile are we going to, do I have to go find, right?
Yeah.
And there's a deep, deep knowledge there in terms of the sourcing recruiters of the people they've reached out to in the past, right? That maybe this isn't the right fit for that role, but this is slightly different. So we were missing some of that. Now, the uplift that comes from that is that from the get-go, the sourcing recruiter is tied into the hire manager relationship, which is great. It allows them to be more visible. It allows them to know the rec more. But sometimes, right, just out of what we would call, like, overly driven results focus, like a desire to get things done, right? They'll maybe, like, be messaging back and forth with the hiring manager and neglect to include the corporate recruiter, right? And it's not out of malice, right? It's just out of, like, the hiring manager hit them up with a question, they start getting going and answering things and moving things along. And so it's just like, oh, whoops, we forgot to include that person. And we got to slow down, back up, and bring people up to speed. And that, obviously, I used that situation with the sourcing recruiter, but it happens the other way around, right? Just as much. So a lot of times it's just literally, hey, we got going, we got on a roll, and we left somebody out of the communication loop, and we need to bring them up to speed.
Well, I don't actually think that challenge is specific to recruiting and sourcing. I think that is just that's just big company, you know, supporting a, you know, business unit or client side. And I think that's just a communication thing. I think that's pretty normal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty fundamental, I think.
I love it. Well, look, guys, if I was if I'm an organization and I'm looking to maybe mirror this, right? Like what would be a key takeaway for me? I mean, based on your experience at CarMax, what advice would you guys give to other organizations or to me looking to maybe optimize that relationship between my sourcing and recruiting teams, kind of bringing them together, building that synergy out? What would you tell me, you know, one thing from each of you that I should really be mindful of or would be your big tip?
I would say connecting those two teams as closely to each other as possible. That's the key. If there's a disconnect and they don't know who each other are, they're not, you know, they don't have that mesh, then that's where the breakdowns happen. The closer those two teams are, the more often they meet as two teams, more often they interact as two full teams, the stronger that relationship builds, the stronger that teamwork aspect builds, and you don't have these breakdowns that many teams encounter.
Yeah. Hatch?
I think the minute you sense frustration in yourself or somebody else, you pick up the phone, like the virtual phone, the video phone, whatever you call it. But pick up the phone. Don't write a Teams message. Don't write an email. Don't call your boss, you know, just connect with that person and say, hey, I sense that you're frustrated, or hey, I feel like we're not in sync. Can we just talk through it? And there's just such a natural hesitation for us as people to do that because we don't want to lean into conflict, most of us, I think. But that's like the number one way we found that people just immediately recognize that none of this was intentional, and we can quickly find the resolution we want and get in sync. And then they're like, you know, both rowing in the same direction, you're going twice as fast. So
yeah,
let's just pick up the phone.
I love that. One of the really valuable lessons I learned as a TA leader is that conflict is not confrontation. Confrontation and conflict are not the same thing.
Yeah.
And that was a powerful moment for me to realize that we can hit something head on, but it doesn't have to be, you know what I mean? It doesn't have to always be like this, but it's good for us to get in there and start talking about it.
It strengthens relationships most times if you get in there and work through it.
100%. Well, look, guys, we're at about our 25-minute mark. Let me ask you, we ask this of all of our guests who are on the show. And Troy, we'll start with you, because I think we started with Hatch before. If you were going to write a book about this experience, building this out, they know Hatch knows what's coming. He's like, whew, God, I wasn't playing. If you're going to write a book about this, what would the title of the book be, Troy?
Oh, great question. Well, Hatch knows that if I were to write a book, it would be a very short book. My communication is always very succinct and short, and Hatch tends to lean the other way, but it would be teamwork. 100% it would be teamwork. The title of it would be teamwork. It's how these things work. It's how two teams can mesh together is teamwork.
Good stuff. Hatch, how about yourself?
Yeah, I already used pick up the phone, so I can't. I feel like that's cheating. Yeah, I think, and I want to give credit where credit is due for this. One of my recruiters, one of my corporate recruiters, taught me this phrase and it encapsulated something I knew before, but I think it would also be a good title of this book, which is kind of to your point, Chris, is clear is kind. Just like being really clear with your expectations and being in direct communication is actually the best way to be kind to somebody. Sometimes it feels like confrontation, right? But it's clarity and getting clarity together is the best way to be kind to the people you work with. So
I love it. So Hatch, here's the curveball, and Troy, you're next. So you didn't have to go first twice in a row, Troy. Hatch, present company excluded. Who gets the first signed copy of your book?
Ooh, that's interesting. I know the answer to this. It would be my, he was my mentor for like 10 years at the staffing agency I worked for. His name's Tom Bailey. Yeah. So
all right.
Tom would get the
book. Tom getting a shout out.
For sure. He put up with me for a long time.
Nice. And Troy, who gets your first signed copy?
Yeah. I was really racking my brain there for a second and you didn't give me a lot of time to think about it, but I would say it would actually go back to the manager who was previously in charge of this team, Jack McCarthy. He's the reason I'm at CarMax. He brought me into CarMax. He brought me into the sourcing world, which I had zero experience in. So he took a chance on me. I think that would be where I would send my first book.
Fantastic. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you. I know you're both super, super busy. Much, much gratitude for your cutting time out of your day to join. We really appreciate the insights.
It was a pleasure.
Happy to do it. Yeah.
All right. It's good stuff. As a quick reminder to everybody else, cxr.org/podcast, really easy. You can grab this. You could also grab it anywhere you subscribe. Online, all the other things, push the buttons, click the things. That's it. All right, everybody. We'll see everybody next week. Let's say bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.
There we go.
Thanks for listening to the CXR channel. Please subscribe to CXR on your favorite podcast resource and leave us a review while you're at it. Learn more about CXR at our website, cxr.works, facebook.com and twitter.com/careercrossroads, and on Instagram @careerxroads. We'll catch you next time.